Today's talk is about five routes to awakening. I've focused on one particular sutta. Last week, I picked the tiniest sutta I've ever seen. I think it was three sentences at the most, but it really led deeply into the nature of dukkha. And so this week, the sutta is a little longer, and it's on how to stop dukkha, particularly as it arises during meditation. The sutta I'm using is the Migya Sutta from the Udana, which is a section of the short collection. And for the Pali enthusiasts among you, that's the Kudaka Nikaya from the whole collection, the Pali Canon. Tanissaro Bhikkhu, the prominent scholar who translated just a mind-boggling percentage of the Pali Canon, says that the Udana is quite likely to have been established during the lifetime of the Buddha. So it's probably genuinely one of his teachings. It sets out five routes to, or qualities that lead to awakening. And then, kind of offhandedly, it adds another four, and then ends with a little poem. But we're going to spend most of this talk on those five. Here's the list. I'll go into them, but admirable friends. I love to have them. I'm very blessed that I have many. The second one is sila in Pali, or morality, or ethics. The third is learning the Dharma. In the Migya Sutta, it says hearing it, because that was the only way to learn it in a pre-literate society. The fourth one is exertion, effort, specifically in letting go of unskillful qualities that we have and cultivating the skillful ones. And the fifth one is awareness of and insight into impermanence, or in Pali, anicca. I think I've already said this is a simple sutta. Almost half of it tells a story about a fairly novice monk. Then almost half is the Buddha's teaching him, and then there's that quick aside with four extra routes to awakening and that poem. And in this story, the monk acts oddly for a monk. He's Migya, and he actually has his own section within the Udana. We meet him for the first time in this sutta when he's serving as the Buddha's attendant, but just barely. On arriving where the Buddha was the morning of that the sutta is about, Migya did the traditionally polite things. He bowed to the Buddha and he stood to one side. And then the first thing that Migya had to say was, "I would like to go into Jantu village for alms." Basically, he wants breakfast. He's saying, in other words, "Good morning, I'm going to go get something to eat." And he doesn't even seem to have asked, "Can I get you anything?" He gets the Buddha's permission. And then the sutta goes into some detail about Migya adjusting his underrobes and carrying his bowl and his robes, going into the village and having a meal. And he was returning from the village by way of strolling up and down the river, it says, to exercise his legs, when he spotted a mango grove. And Maggia is doing all of this when he's supposed to be attending to the Buddha. When he sees the mango grove, he has the thought, how pleasing and charming this mango grove. It's enough for a young man of good family, intent on exertion, to exert himself in meditation. If the Blessed One gives me permission, I would like to exert myself in this mango grove. Maggia returned to the Blessed One, again went through the forms of greeting, and then asked for permission to leave the Buddha again, this time to go exert himself in meditation. The Buddha replied, "As long as I am still alone, stay here until another monk comes." The sutta doesn't actually say it, but you can almost feel Maggia fidgeting and then blurting out the request again, this time with the reasoning, "You're not doing anything, really, or likely to be, and I have something to do. Can't I go exert myself in that mango grove?" The Buddha repeated, word for word, his previous reply, basically, "No, stay until another monk comes." The first time I read this sutta, I got to about here, and I began to think, what's wrong with this guy? He can spend the day hanging out with the Buddha, and instead, he's itching to go off to a pleasing and charming mango grove. And without having done anything for the Buddha yet, he asked to be excused for a third time. Same argument. "You're not doing anything, and I want to go to the mango grove and exert myself." In the Buddha's reply, you can almost hear his wisely spoken exasperation. He says, "As you are talking about exertion, Maggia, what can we say? Do what you think it is now time to do." And with that, Maggia seems to have gotten right up, bowed and circled to the right of Buddha, and went to his coveted mango grove, there to sit on a root under a certain tree. And he was absolutely astounded to find that his practice was awful. He kept being bombarded by thoughts of sensuality, ill will, and of harming other beings. So he went back to the Buddha to share his astonishment. The Buddha was not surprised. Very patiently, the Buddha guided the young man's practice. And this begins the second part of the sutta, the teaching. Buddha said, "Maggia, in one whose awareness release is still immature, five qualities bring it to maturity." Well, we know what he meant about the immaturity. He was talking about Maggia's practice. But what did he mean about awareness release? And this took some fun digging. And it's when the mind is released from dukkha by concentrating enough to achieve tranquility and let go of passions. Passions such as sensuality, ill will, and wanting to hurt others. And Buddha knew that these were the thoughts that Megia was having during his meditation because he told him so. So next, the Buddha gave Megia 5 ways that he could develop his practice aimed at this kind of tranquility using concentration. And we'll talk about the type using Vipassana or insight later. But this part is about concentration, just getting the mind clear. The first helpful quality is revealing, and it's having admirable friends, companions, and colleagues. So this is quite pointedly at Megia, because what was he so eager to do in order to go exert himself in that mango grove? He wanted to leave the Buddha's company. He could have spent the whole day hanging out with the Buddha, getting to know him, and soaking up his wisdom by example or direct teaching. The suttas have a lot of tales of people who just heard the Buddha speak once and were immediately enlightened because he was the consummate teacher. But Megia couldn't wait to go off and do what he thought was better. The other 4 routes after admirable friends that the Buddha taught him were, again, ethics, hearing the Dharma, exertion at meditation, and awareness of and insight into impermanence. So the admirable friends is number one, not only because it's what Megia was completely overlooking, but it's important because it makes all the other 4 happen. Buddha explained Megia, when a monk has admirable people as friends, companions, and colleagues, it is expected that he would be virtuous. When a monk has admirable people as friends and colleagues, it's to be expected that he will get to hear at will, easily and without difficulty, talk that is truly sobering and conducive to the opening of awareness, such as talk on contentment, seclusion, persistence, virtue, concentration, etc. The kind of stuff you hear around here all the time. When a monk has admirable people as friends, it is to be expected that he will remain persistent for taking on skillful qualities, steadfast, solid in his effort. And when a monk has admirable people as friends, it's to be expected that he will be discerning, relating to arising and passing away, noble, penetrating, leading to the right ending of stress. So again, the Buddha is saying that having admirable friends shoehorns us into these 4 other qualities that allow us to develop tranquility and the willingness to abandon passions so that we'll be released from the suffering that they cause, those passions. I was once listening to Joseph Goldstein talk at an event that I organized, and there was someone in the audience who said, "But I love passion." And Joseph said, "Well, don't you feel at all uncomfortable when you're feeling passionate?" And he said, "No, that's what life is about." So, tranquility. Really, it's in tranquility that we get to see that the passions that do come up while we're meditating actually cause us suffering. We can feel it in the body. And again, that's what I was suggesting during the guidance to the meditation, to look for how our thoughts make the body feel. This whole sutta exposes Meghia's unwise conduct in wanting to abandon the Buddha for his pleasant and charming mango grove. And the Buddha showed us not only that he was a really good teacher, but what Sangha, admirable friends, can do by very gently and firmly pointing out to Meghia what he had done wrong. Just as any spiritual companion and colleague should do, bringing mistakes to your attention and providing guidance on how to practice more effectively. As I mentioned before, this sutta is about the root of concentration. To put it in everyday terms, to focus and really see things. But Meghia was an immature practitioner with poor control over his thoughts and impulses. And no mango grove on earth was going to enable him to meditate enough to stabilize his thinking. He just wasn't there yet. And the faith that he mentioned in leaving his family to go become a monk wasn't enough either. He needed to modify his behavior and his attitudes, such as, for example, letting go of the way he was attached to being a young man of good family. And to help him make these changes, he needed good friends. So this is the importance of ethics. And for lay people, it's the five precepts. And it's also important to know the Dharma so that when we notice these things, we can understand them. And we need to exert ourselves, particularly as lay people, because we get a lot of challenges that monastics don't ordinarily face. We need to kind of stay in shape by meditating every day. And again, what makes this medicine go down is the company of like-minded people who think that what we're doing is not only perfectly normal, but what they want to do too. So in addition to making this point about the importance of having good friends, there are other suttas where he warns us against having bad friends. There's a phrase in the Dhammapada that says, travel on alone rather than with a fool for company. You know, I'm sure you have noticed people who are so influenced by their friends that they do really unwise things, get themselves into trouble. I spend most of my time with serious practitioners, and it's definitely a support for my practice. Countless times I've come to understand more clearly what I have learned about the Dharma when I see friends act out the insights that they have had into it. These are the kind of people who will casually correct a restaurant bill that's omitted something, so they'll pay more, or who will deal with a really kind of quarrelsome person firmly but respectfully. Who but a spiritual friend really could help point out when we're not conducting ourselves quite so wisely? The Buddha's teachings to Meghia is aimed at release from the dukkha of unwise thinking. So the mind can be developed enough for insight to arise. Megia was at stage one, and beyond that is stage two, Vipassana. When we have friends who support us in living without harming others, our conscience won't agitate our thoughts. Admirable friends also inspire us to learn the Dharma, listen to talks, read books, and come sit with the Sangha. With the tranquility that we get from doing this and the clarity of mind, we begin to see ever more clearly impermanence happening in our lives and right in the moment. This awareness release that the Buddha's been talking about lets us then develop release through discernment or wisdom or insight. There are fluid Pali terms here. The Buddha then quickly told Megia that when the first five qualities are established, one should abandon passion by focusing on the unattractive aspects of it. Like Joseph was saying, telling that fellow, if you're feeling passion, don't go with it. Look at how it's affecting the body. One should also develop goodwill or metta to abandon ill will and learn to cut off thought by concentrating on the breath and focus on anicca or change in order to overcome clinging, particularly to the idea of self. As we see more and more clearly the suffering that comes from clinging to impermanent things, we're able to let go of anything, even our idea of ourselves. This is the practice of insight, or Vipassana, leading eventually, or sometimes suddenly, to total release, or nirvana. So finally, here's the poem. Little thoughts, subtle thoughts, when followed, stir up the heart. Not comprehending the thoughts of the heart, one runs here and there, the mind out of control. But comprehending the thoughts of the heart, one who is ardent, mindful, restrains them. When followed, they stir up the heart. One awakened lets them go without trace. So may you awaken now and always. Thank you.